This is Greg Olson, and I'm thrilled to introduce my new podcast, TE1. TE1 will chronicle a 60-year evolution of the tight end position, from its origins as an obscure, overlooked blocking role to the versatile superstar position that it is today. I'll explore the evolution of the position through conversations with some of the all-time game-changing tight ends. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability, the same attributes it takes to be a tight end.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Geno Time Podcast here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We are brought to you by Bet Online. My name is Tom Westerholm, Celtics beat writer for MassLive. I am joined by Nicole Yang of the Boston Globe. Nicole, how you doing?
Well, Tom, I know I made this exact same joke to start the podcast after game six, but, you know, I'm tired because it's 1:45, yet I can't imagine being as tired as the players who just gutted out a game seven win, you know?
I mean, that game looked exhausting. I mean, it was a heck of a game. Celtics beat the Raptors in game seven, 92-87. Just some takeaways from that game. Nicole, what were some of the biggest things that stood out to you?
It came down to the wire, which is, of course, what you would want for a game seven. Like, it came down to the final minutes of the fourth quarter. And in those final minutes, the two biggest plays of the game, as Brad Stevens said, were Marcus Smart's block of Norman Powell and Jason Tatum's offensive rebound after Grant Williams missed two free throws.
The block by Marcus Smart, I mean, that was really one of the, I mean, that was the biggest play of the Celtics season. I mean, he stayed right with Norman Powell and then somehow managed to elevate and block that without committing a goaltend. Just a phenomenal play. I mean, there's going to be a lot written about this game. Jason Tatum showed real superstar stuff. Like, it wasn't the most efficient line, but just putting up 29 points in a game like that and just really willing the Celtics over the finish line was really impressive. I thought Grant coming in cold was really impressive. But I think that all of that aside, the big play of the game was the Marcus Smart block. The big play of the Celtics season was the Marcus Smart block. Anything else that you wanted to get into on this game before we go into winners and losers?
Well, I feel like Grant probably won't fall into a winner or loser category just because we just see him in such small doses. But I thought tonight he played really well. After Tice fouled out, they went to Grant over Rob. And I thought that that was potentially an opportunity for Toronto to take advantage of him. And he definitely messed up by missing those two free throws. I think that was just nerves for him. But, like, you got to make free throws in that game. Like, if they lose, he's definitely getting the brunt of that. So, like he said on his Instagram, shout out to Jason Tatum for bailing him out there by getting that rebound. But then on one of Toronto's, like, desperation plays, he manages to stay poised.
After Tatum went 1-for-2, because these guys could not make two free throws to save their lives tonight.
He manages to stay poised on Fred VanVleet. And I feel like that's an example of why you go to Grant, because Rob probably would have jumped or, you know, committed a foul potentially. Like, the likelihood of that happening with Rob in the game is a lot higher to have a defensive error. And I think Grant really showed why he is the better option in that situation.
I think that it's, like, unquestionably that Grant comes out a winner in this. Like, I know it's, like, a small sample size, but, like, the fact that he came in and performed, you know, not only well, but, like, I thought we'll see what happens. I think there's a real chance that he ends up getting some minutes, some major minutes against Miami, given that, you know, Miami's got Bam Adebayo, who is sort of, like, you know, he's bigger and more athletic and, you know, better than Grant. But, like, Grant at least is, like, a similar, like, you know, mobile, strong, big man. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we saw some more of Grant. And again, it's in part, like, after the game, Brad said, like, Grant stays ready. Like, he stays ready to play. You know, it's a small sample size, but I think you can call Grant a winner just based on that.
I'm probably being too harsh, but if he made his two free throws, I would definitely consider him a winner. But, like, you can't miss both of them there. Like, that would have sealed the game, you know? Like,
it really would have. Yeah, no, that I feel that for sure.
I feel for him because he's a rookie.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. But you just can't miss those. You really can't.
I respect that. Like, obviously, missing the free throws was near catastrophic, but he did kind of make that catch on the Kemba pass. He fouled Kyle Lowry out on that play.
No, totally. And even outside of game seven, like, I feel like for winners and losers, the exercise is to look at the series holistically. And Grant had a great series. He's actually making threes. Like, he's...
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure.
Defense. He got a couple of key offensive rebounds. He had a good series, but I just think, like, in game seven, and a function of this is circumstance, like, he wasn't the choice there. I'm sure Brad Stevens would have preferred to have Daniel Tice, but to miss those, it just could have ended up much worse. And you just never want that possibility to be out there.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the Raptors could have maybe tried to, like, attack Grant, and they did, actually. While Tice was on the bench, they had Siakam go right at him a bunch of times, which, like, was hit or miss because, my goodness, Pascal Siakam was brutal. The other thing I would just say about that game, Jason Tatum was 9 for 23, 29 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. I mean, high-level stuff against the second-best defense in the NBA during the regular season and a team that just clamped down. Like, they were just firing on all cylinders defensively, everything that they weren't doing offensively. One thing I will say about Siakam, like, he was bad offensively, but, like, he actually kind of, I mean, a lot of times he was just a difference maker defensively because his arms are so long. And Tatum did blow by him one-on-one, but, like, as part of a team scheme, Siakam was pretty good. Point being that Jason Tatum, I just thought that tonight's performance was really special. All right, let's do some winners and losers.
All right, I mean, so the obvious one is Pascal Siakam comes out looking like a loser. Again, sort of, we did this after the Philly series, and this isn't necessarily an indictment of Pascal Siakam's regular season, Pascal Siakam's career moving forward, but just in this series, he 1,000% underperformed. And I think Nick Nurse would tell you that. Pascal Siakam said it after the game today. He said, I would blame myself, or I feel like the blame is on me type thing. And it's like, the wild thing about it is, like, it was the entire series. Like, yeah. Even that game, we've talked about this in our instant reactions, even that game where he quote unquote went off, it was not good. And he just never
seemed. Stan Van Gundy mentioned that on the broadcast tonight. He pointed out, like, yeah, he scored 23 points, but he went 2 for 13 from three.
And the problem with that isn't even the fact that he went 2 of 13. Like, it's not the shooting percentage that bothers me. It's the fact that he took 13 threes. I think that just shows how difficult it has been for him to get anything going in the paint. And a lot of that is due to Jaylen Brown's defense. Also, the Celtics defense as a whole, like Grant Williams, you sort of, like what we mentioned earlier, you think that's a matchup Pascal Siakam would be able to take advantage of, but Grant's able to hold his ground. The other weird thing, though, is that even when he has easy lanes to the basket, or even when it looks like he has a gimme layup, he still manages to miss it. The ball still manages to either roll out of the rim or go in and out. And it's just like, the dude couldn't buy a bucket. His offense this series was abysmal. And the fact that Toronto was able to stay in it with that performance is really encouraging. And I think speaks to sort of their identity. But if I'm the Raptors, like, they probably aren't thinking this way, but you just got to think, if you could get something from Pascal Siakam, it would have been a game changer for them. I obviously don't have it in front of me how many total turnovers he had in the series, but, like, just seemed to have, like, no control of the ball, just, like, no control of his game. Like, every time he got the ball and started posting up someone, even if it was Grant Williams, it looked like a very laborious task.
He had 5 turnovers tonight.
And, like, some of them were in key moments, too.
Yeah. I think it was one where he just, like, coughed it up in the post late in the fourth quarter. And I just, like, I genuinely don't know what was going on. Like, I do think that his defense was a little undervalued in this series. But, like, that aside, he was so detrimental to the offense. Every time he touched the ball, you just were cringing for him. It looked awful. You never thought, oh, he's got an open three, he's going to make it. And I don't know if you remember the first time the Celtics and Raptors met this season. He was incredible. Well, you know, way back, I mean, almost a year ago at this point. But, I mean, he was making, like, pull-up threes. He was doing all the stuff that you watched it, and you were just like, is this guy going to, like, take over the league? Like, what is happening?
Usually when players have bad performances and people get their jokes off, you know, it's one game or, like, one play or a short time span. Like, people are saying, like, I've never seen a player look like they forgot how to play basketball in a whole series. And, like, that legitimately was Pascal Siakam. That's just not, like, hyperbolic comedy here.
Yeah, I'm sure every basketball player has had a game where it feels like you've forgotten how to play basketball. Like, it just happens sometimes. One game would be totally normal. But to your point, 7 in a row? Like,
even 2 games at this level.
Sure, absolutely.
In the bubble. Even 3 games. We'll give them that too. But 7 games.
I mean, the Raptors made Kemba look like he forgot how to play basketball a little bit in, like, game 6 and 7, because they threw a literal box and 1 at him. But, yeah, I mean, Siakam's was obviously different.
It was just – and like you said, I feel like that's the perfect description. It's just, like, every time he got the ball, I can, like, physically remember myself just cringing, because you're like, how bad is this going to get? Yeah. Like, every time he makes a basket, you're surprised. And that's not how you should feel about your budding superstar during the playoffs.
No, it is not. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think Robert Williams was a loser in this series. The Celtics were hoping to see, I think, what they saw in the seeding games. They saw some of that stuff with him, but I think more than anything, the thing that stands out is just his continued struggles on the defensive end. But the problem with the playoffs is that it is a zero-sum game, and you have to do the right things, and it does not matter if you're developing, especially on a team like the Celtics. Like, the Celtics are not here for your development. The Celtics are here to win. Rob struggled. I mean, obviously there's things that he did well, but like, just in general, the defensive problems, I think, are going to probably give Brad some pause before he signs Rob up for big minutes going forward.
So I think this series really proved that Rob still is the same player, if that makes sense. If he can play to his potential or somewhat close to what his potential is, then he makes for a really good rotation player. As we saw in this series, you see the benefits of that verticality and that explosiveness. And he got offensive rebounds. He was lobbed to thousands of times. Or not thousands, dozens thousands. Of times. And he had his field goal percentage for the series is like in the high 80s. So like, there are benefits to having him on the court offensively. But ultimately, again, what you see is that just that he's not ready. What do you anticipate for his playing time against the Heat?
I do think that there is something to the idea of having somebody who is really bouncy, who can just kind of do some different things than what Bam does. While Bam is an excellent athlete, I suspect that Rob is, has an even higher vertical leap, just because who doesn't have a higher vertical leap then? I don't know that I think that that's going to necessarily move Brad, who really likes guys who he can trust in a system. He really likes guys, especially that he can trust defensively, because obviously Rob gives you some offense, especially if Gordon Hayward comes back. The Celtics have plenty of offense. They feel like they have their guys. I don't think Rob's going to get if the series goes six games, I don't think Rob's going to have six DNP CDs or anything like that. If he doesn't play a little bit better, or if we don't see a better matchup between him and Bam, I would be surprised if we saw a bunch of games where he's got more than 10.
With the Bam matchup, I just think Bam is so much stronger than him.
Yeah.
And I know Rob has the height, but I think Bam,
especially in his base, that matters so much.
Power his way to the hoop. So I feel like Brad has been using him basically as a jolt of offense. If he feels like the Celtics are just kind of, I don't know what exactly it is in those specific moments, but I feel like he is in just, sort of bring that bounciness and to hopefully get a few easy buckets. And then it's all right, once Serge Ibaka comes in this series, he takes Rob out.
If you look at Rob's numbers, his offensive ratings are great and his defensive ratings are not great. If that's the way you're using him, I think that's the way that makes the most sense. I will say Adebayo is not a three-point shooter, and that really seems to be what has tripped up Rob the most. So maybe if he doesn't have to worry so much about Bam, maybe if he's able to go into more of a drop coverage, because I mean that's where it makes the most sense to have him. He's so long and everything. Maybe that works out for him. That said, I think that could probably bring us to one of the losers, one of the other losers. A player who Rob had plenty of success against because he couldn't find his shot at all. I think Marc Gasol is a huge loser in this series.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just I think we're looking at the last few years of Marc Gasol's career.
It's very easy for us to call a 35-year-old player a loser. I just think
much easier for you, as I am much closer to 35 than you are.
But what do you expect out of someone like Marc Gasol, who's 35? It's not like he's LeBron James, you know what I mean? When certain players get to that point in their career, they're just going to be washed against younger talent. And obviously there are exceptions to that, but I think the average player, their age just plays a huge factor. And I think in our episode with Ben Golliver, he made a perfect analogy because it was right before game 6 when Serge Ibaka was questionable with his ankle injury and he was walking around with a boot after the game. And he goes, well, Serge Ibaka has a walking boot on, but Marc Gasol has been playing with two walking boots on. So I would rather take Serge, because that's true. His mobility and it was so bad. And on top of that, he couldn't buy a shot. He had a couple of open threes tonight against Rob and couldn't knock him down. And I think the most telling stat is in the first half, the Raptors are up by 7, seem to be in control of the game. Obviously, it's still early, but they definitely seem to be the team that's in control. Marc Gasol checks in, and then the Celtics go on a 17-6 run to head into halftime with the lead. And it's just like the fact that Nick Nurse stuck with him to start the second half, I thought was an interesting decision. Surprised he didn't just go with Serge. And then once you reach that point in the fourth or end of third quarter, just ride your all small lineup. I thought that was an interesting decision, but yeah, no way he comes out in the winner column. Like you said, it's kind of tough to call him a loser because he's like a 35-year-old center, but he did nothing in this series, I feel like, that proved otherwise.
Obviously, like you talked about him missing shots against the Celtics, like he was not a factor offensively. Defensively was where I thought the Celtics really hurt him, like especially with Kemba. Like if Gasol tried to come up, they were just blowing right by him, and that's, especially with the Celtics, that's so problematic because so much of their offense is predicated on drive and kick. So if that initial drive like takes one of the guys completely out of the play and you're running your most comfortable offense 5-on-4 anyway, it's a problem. Other losers, I don't really have that many other losers. I mean, there were guys who had like, you know, good moments, bad moments. I mean, for instance, like Norman Powell, I'm not quite comfortable calling him like a winner, but like,
I just don't think he falls into either category. Yeah.
And that's where I come down on most of the rest of the guys who aren't winners. Right. So I don't think I have any other losers unless you do.
Yeah. I don't think I do either.
Why don't you give us our first big winner for you?
I would say Brad Stevens comes out looking really good after this series. I thought this series was definitely, not only was it a matchup between the players, but like the coaches too, in terms of the adjustments, because the Raptors threw out all of those defenses. The Raptors threw out their small ball lineup. Brad had to account for all of that because the box and one was affecting Kemba. Like, sort of unlike the Philly series, like the coaches' adjustments were actually affecting the players. And if you don't account for them, it could be the difference. And I think Brad really countered everything Nick Nurse brought well.
I agree. I mean, the Celtics have so many good players that a lot of times I think you can forget that they also have like a, you know, really good coach behind it. But this was a series where I think coaching played a pretty major role. Sometimes the coaches were even on the court. But well, I do think
said that was legal. So
the NBA did say that was legal. You're right. The ways that Brad managed to counter what Nick Nurse was doing, I think the biggest one was exactly what you said, like figuring out ways to still score against the box and one. Or at least score just enough, because they still only put up 92 points in game 7. But to figure out what you needed to do against that was crucial. It was a good series by Brad. That's a good call. I'm going to go with winner. I think Marcus Smart comes out as a big winner in this series. He was excellent. Really kind of the counter to Kyle Lowry in a couple of games. He obviously had that big explosion in game 2. Tonight, he had the chase down block, but he was also just, you know, a solid player. And an epic stream of retweets and tweets after the game. I think he was mad that the NBA tweeted hashtag We the North a bunch of times after game 6. But either way, I enjoy the cryptic Twitter drama after some of these games.
I was kind of confused by that behavior because I think the general sentiment from both teams is like, what a battle, great series, tough series, credit to the Raptors, credit to the Celtics. It was a lot of mutual respect that felt genuine. And I think was genuine. Everybody has pointed it out at this point. Marcus Smart and Kyle Lowry are the Spider-Man meme. So there's a certain level, I guess, of maybe gamesmanship or something there. But it never got chippy to the point that other Celtics playoff series have gotten chippy or like testy. Minus, I guess, that scrum sort of. That scrum didn't even get that aggressive after game 6.
Yeah.
I was just kind of surprised to see him sort of go off. I don't know. I think you're right in that it was a direct shot at the NBA because so he tweeted his own tweet of the King of the North, basically the same number of times that the NBA had tweeted out that hashtag. So maybe that was it, but I don't know.
So my guess is that what happened is he tweeted the King of the North thing, and this is just a guess, but I think he tweeted the King of the North thing because he was mad at the NBA. And then I think he retweeted the NBA when he realized that people were taking it as like a direct shot at Toronto. Because later he said all the same things that all the other Celtics players said about just like, you know, how much they respect Toronto, especially how much they respect Lowry, like all that stuff. I think he meant every word of it. Like he clearly had a lot of respect for those guys. Him and other guys were like yucking it up. I think like might've been in like it felt like a pretty like tense game 7 moment, and he and Lowry were just like chuckling on the sideline together. Like, I think that's probably what was going on there, that like he saw a lot of people saying like, oh, Smart's dunking on Toronto. He's like, oh, wait a minute. No, I should make sure everybody knows that I'm referencing this.
Right, because Smart's also not that type of guy to get, I think, that petty. Like, usually when he gets petty, it's not in that overt way. It's more in like a, I think, subtle, or like there's humor layered in his approach usually. Like, this just seemed like such a direct shot. So I was just so surprised.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that he feels fine taking a direct shot at the league.
Correct. Yeah. which I respect immensely. Marcus Smart, winner. Kyle Lowry is a big winner in this series. Not that he cares what I think, but I was just very impressed. I found him to be just a big one. I like came away with a lot more respect. I always think it's interesting when you cover a series how much more respect for opposing superstars you have, because, you know, you see them every once in a while and like you catch like a few games on TNT, but you're not really like, except for the games where that like Lowry is playing against the Celtics, I'm not really like taking notes on him. I'm not really noticing all the little things that he does and how important it is to the Raptors when he gets to the basket, how much he holds together defensively as a point guard. And then when you cover a series that he's playing in and you are taking notes and it's day after day after day, you really kind of learn something about him. And I've always thought that Lowry was fine, but getting to finally cover a series that he's playing in, I have a lot of respect for that dude. He is a Hall of Famer, and he is just an impressive basketball player.
So I would argue that it doesn't always give you respect. I would argue that it's amazing how watching a series or covering a series just completely like influences your view of a player. Because yeah. In Kyle Lowry's instance, it's respect, and you're like, wow, you want this guy on your team. For example, with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, I feel like Celtics fans have the most skewed view of those guys.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Because the Celtics have just dominated them in these playoff series. And I bet moving forward, Celtics fans are not going to let Pascal Siakam forget this, and they're just going to assume Pascal Siakam sucks.
Yeah,
we're not going to see him in like this extended view. So I always find it fascinating that like your view is just so influenced, which makes sense. It's like potentially 7 games in a row of seeing them. It definitely skews people's views of players for better or for worse.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, Brad obviously likes to say good, nice things about opponents, but tonight he said that he thinks that Lowry is like one of the toughest players that he has had to coach against.
Throughout the series, Brad has been very complimentary of Kyle, and I think also in an unprompted way. Like, yes. Somehow Lowry just works his way into all of Brad's answers. And he also was basically the only Raptor that Brad was praising that effusively, like, or maybe praised at all.
Yeah, I think literally at all. Yeah. You can always tell when Brad like respects somebody, and like when he like really likes somebody. Like, somebody asked tonight, like, does Toronto make you better? You know, he said, I mean, of course, I've coached in a lot of playoff games now. And like, you could just kind of feel him working up to like complimenting Lowry. And then sure enough, that's when he got around to like, I think Lowry, obviously, he's up there with the best I've ever coached as far as thinking the game and putting people in spots. Other winners, I mean, we don't have to go too deep into him because, like, we talk about him all the time. But Jason Tatum, I thought, was, a winner in this series. You expect your superstar to step up, and I thought he stepped up. It's really kind of just that simple. Like, he had, like, a couple of off games, but he also had some great ones. I would put him in the winner column as well.
So because he's Jason Tatum, and I think you suggested this when we did winners and losers for the Sixers series, like, we should hold him to a higher standard because generally he's going to be in the winners category.
Yeah, for sure.
I think for him, I agree, but I think it's the game 7 performance that really puts him in the winners category, because he did have a couple games where it wasn't like, again, not like a bad night, but just not great. I think there were a couple nights where he was 5 of 15, you know, like I think there are a couple nights where he just maybe wasn't like the most, he didn't bring maybe as much like offensive firepower as he is capable of.
No, but I think that you're exactly right that it was game 7 that put him over the top. Because, yeah, I mean, game 6, I think he had, what, like 29 points, and you still just kind of came away from game 6 like, eh, could have been better. You know, defensively, I mean, he's been crucial to the Celtics throughout the playoffs. Before tonight's game, they were 21 points per 100 possessions better defensively when he was on the court. I have one other winner, and it's kind of, it's a little bit different because it's not based on him playing well. But I think Kemba Walker is a winner. He came to the Celtics hoping to make deep playoff runs. He's in the conference finals now. And like, yeah, Raptors did a really nice job limiting him with the box and one. And, you know, they obviously kind of took him out of the game, especially in game 6. But just more importantly, I think just the fact that he, you know, set out to make deep playoff runs, to be like a part of like meaningful playoff games, he has gotten to do that. And now he gets to continue to do that in the conference finals. So I think maybe not a winner for his play on the court, but just kind of a winner overall. I would say that's Kemba.
Yeah, you could tell how pumped he was after the game, just seeing his reaction. And I think Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times, he tweeted that as Campbell was walking off the court, he shouted, like, let's effing go. I feel like this means a lot to him. And Brad also, speaking of Brad being effusive, has said multiple times how much Kemba loves basketball, how important he is to this team. And just he is obsessed with Kemba's sort of energy and just his approach to the game. And I think it's because the two of them love basketball so much. And they don't love sort of everything else that comes with it. Like, they could care less about, like, I mean, I'm sure Kemba wants to get paid and same with Brad, but they could really care less about the spotlight and brand deals and everything sort of that comes with being a basketball coach, or more of a basketball player. And then I guess when you coach the Celtics, but I think they share a lot of the same mindset though, when it comes to this profession.
It's tough not to look at the way that Kemba reacted to, like, some things going wrong, and also look at, like, the way that Kyrie reacted to whatever happened between games one and game two last year of the semifinals. Kemba's just a very different human, a very different basketball player, and very much what this team needed, I think, especially after last year.
It's not just that they're different. Like, they're on, like, opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to Kyrie was always cryptic whenever he would talk about the young players, or critical.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Kemba is just, like, openly, I've used the word effusive so many times, but just, like, so effusive in his praise. I mean, Kyrie had Uncle Drew and, like, obviously commercials and stuff. I mean, he made that Nike commercial talking about his jersey in the rafters. Like, Kemba doesn't seem to care about that stuff.
Yeah. So I guess the last winner I have, and we can keep this one quick because our listeners are probably don't care too much about it, but I think OG Anunoby's a winner from this series.
Oh, yeah.
Defensively, he was awesome. Individually, as part of the team. Offensively, he showed some real flashes of what he could be in the future. So I would call him a winner. I don't think it's, like, a clear cut one, because tonight he was 1 for 3. Like, you know, he had, like, he wasn't like a superstar or anything for that. But I just think he was a really good, solid player. And I think there's a lot of room for him to grow too.
I think it's clear cut because he had a good series and he made that shot in game three. Fair. Like, if he doesn't make that shot in game three, it's over. And it's not like the rest of his series was, like, subpar. Like, he had an above average series as a whole, and then he makes that shot. Like, I think he's definitely a winner. That's a good one. I forgot about him. Serge Ibaka actually comes out looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially sort of given where his career was just, like, a couple seasons ago. I mean, he also did exactly what they needed him to do. Like, he had really good stat lines. I think it's a really good sign that if you're injured and there's a chance that you might not play, and everyone's, like, freaking out about your team's chances, like, that's a pretty good indication for you, because if he didn't play in game six, like, who knows? I thought he had a really good series.
Agreed. All right, guys. Well, we'll leave it there. Heck of a series. Really fun. Game one of Miami Celtics is on Tuesday. We appreciate anybody who has left us a rating or a review. Get in touch with us, and we will talk to you all soon.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.